DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Did not get a chance to watch the Lions and the Packers, and the reason I bring that up is because that was the game that Tony Romo and Jim Nantz were on this weekend. So I didn't get a chance to see if Tony Romo, who I think the general consensus on Romo, Seth, is that he kind of hit rock bottom a couple years ago in terms of the prep and the stepping on Jim. The Super Bowl in 2024 between the Chiefs and the Niners was kind of the nadir for the two of them.
Romo was really just phoning it in at that point. You could tell he wasn't doing nearly the amount of prep that he should do. He just didn't sound like he knew what the hell he was talking about half the time.
They botched the final call of the Super Bowl. Like, that's the worst. That is rock bottom. And I thought last year in the games I watched Romo, I'm like, okay, someone got in his ear because I thought he was better last year.
Reports that they had an intervention offseason.
That's right.
The CBS executives actually went to his house to meet with him.
That's right. Still not to the level he was when he was this sensation back in 2017. Remember in 2017, it looked like his two choices for employment were going to be either quarterback for the Houston Texans. Yeah. That was when the Cowboys were all in on Dak after Dak's rookie year, or broadcast. I think he chose the right venture. I mean, he's the highest paid guy in his vocation.
Yeah. So, but he also, I mean, when you watch like Greg Olsen call a game, Greg Olsen studies, he knows his stuff. Yes. You learn a lot from it. That's always the benchmark for me is I like guys who can come in and when they do a Texans game, I'm learning things about the Texans that I don't know.
That's a great
way to put it. As opposed to saying things like, what are you talking about? They never line up in this formation. They lined up in it 7 times last week.
Yep.
Like and that's where Romo had gotten to me. Like, I just feel like he's learning about the teams as he's watching them play. As opposed to like Greg Olsen. Tom Brady, you might not like him and he might still need polish or whatever, but he puts the work in. He knows the team that he's covering.
Did you get a chance to watch any of JJ's debut?
Only little snippets, but I remember watching him. I went back and watched the Christmas Day one last year, and I thought he did a really good job on that one. And like JJ, kind of like Greg Olsen, I think is going to be a guy that there's no chance in hell JJ is not going to be prepared for the game that he's going
to. 1,000%. JJ's not going to embarrass himself. There's no chance of that. Andrew Marchand of The Athletic has an interesting theory, I guess I'll call it, about JJ Watt and his immediate elevation to the number two team. We should keep that in mind. JJ was on part-time studio for CBS, did that Christmas Day game last year on Netflix, widely acclaimed to have done a good job, especially his first game ever as a color analyst. So as we all know, CBS moved J.J. Watt into the booth and shot him past everybody in the pecking order other than Tony Romo. Marchand is the media critic or media writer for sports for The Athletic. And he points out that, man, when Romo got that big deal back in 2020, $18 million a year, completely reset the marketplace for high-level color analysts, CBS didn't have a plan B. Like, Romo had them over a barrel, and he got a big payday out of it. Their next guy down with Ian Eagle at the time was Dan Fouts, who was aging his way out of the business. Charles Davis was on their roster as well. Not a big enough name. JJ is a big name who works hard at this, who's a future Hall of Famer, and who I think, and on Sunday, I think Marchand says here, JJ Watt showed potential with a foundation to eventually be excellent. And Marchand's point is that, like, when Romo's contract is up this next time around, they're not going to get caught with their pants down. There will be a plan B to elevate to the first team if they need to.
Yeah, I think it's perfect for JJ because he doesn't have as high a profile. And I think however long it's, he's going to be better at it at the end of the season than he was in week one. All the reports I saw were that he was really good in week one. So I think this is if I had to bet money on it, he'll be the lead guy by 2 years from now or 3 years. When's the contract up for
Tony Romo's got 5 years left.
Oh, 5 years. Okay. Yeah. I would say 3 years. I'm going to say 3 years.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And do you?
I think they demote Romo and give him the option of whether he wants to work or not.
Now that would be circle of life, because you remember what happened when Tony Romo got that gig? Is that Phil Simms got booted to the studio?
Yeah.
So that would be circle of life if JJ were to come in and boot Tony Romo to the studio.
I know there's a lot of people that like Romo just because it feels like it's more fun. It feels like you're drunk at a party. The problem is, for me, it feels like he's drunk too. I want to be the drunk one. I want to be the drunk one who's got a jovial, good-natured, but teetotaling friend who's explaining things to me, being sure I get home all right. You know, there's too many times during the game that Romo just doesn't know what the hell's going on. Yeah. God help me. The next time I have to sit through Romo receiving an explanation from the rules official and not understanding the explanation, but then all of a sudden turning and agreeing with the explanation as if he understands it. I can't take it, Sean.
No, I get
it. These old bones can't handle the stress.
I get it. Marshawn points out some interesting things in this article. And by the way, I'm rooting for JJ. I hope JJ's excellent at this. I watched the first 20 minutes of the game on Sunday, because you and I had to do pregame at 12:25, and then I went back and watched not the cut-up version, but I kind of did the whole fast-forwarding through certain parts and watched it. Yeah. I thought he did, for the second time doing it, first time being Christmas last year, I thought he was great. I thought he did a good job. The things, there were one thing he got big praise on, the second thing that he, and another thing he got criticized on by Marshawn. Marshawn loved his enthusiasm. Like, big enthusiasm, like JJ, and I think that's really key. And that's what you talked about with Romo. Romo's got that enthusiasm.
Right, though. People love it. Feels like a good time. Honestly, that's why a lot of people like Ross Tucker. He sounds like he's so excited to be at a football game.
Yes.
It gives you the feeling of like, oh, I'm there live, because this guy is
totally
showing me how excited he is to be there.
It's contagious. Now, the one criticism that Marshawn had, which is very fixable, too much of the what and not enough of the why, especially on passing plays.
Now, that'll be the interesting thing, because a quarterback obviously is going to have more, you know, at least in the eyes of the fans, credibility when it comes to the passing game, and then more just natural knowledge of it. And I think some of that, because JJ has studied this, and I think a lot of times, I learned a lot more about the non-line play part of football after I was done playing football than I ever did while I was playing football.
Yeah.
So, there's probably a little bit of a confidence level there, too, where... And the other part, though, too, and this is one of the hard things for quarterbacks to go through when they become color commentators, it's that, it's impossible sometimes to know exactly what coverage a team was in, even if you watch it on film 20 times, because there's little tweaks. And it might look like cover two, but that's textbook cover two. But no, there's differences there. So you got to kind of be confident enough to speak about what things, how it looks like it actually happened. But if you don't want to go all the way there and skewer a guy who wasn't actually in the wrong, there's a balance to that. And that's the kind of thing that I think over the course of 17 weeks, JJ will get better at. And I didn't listen, so I'm just taking Marshawn's word for it.
Yeah, well, I texted you early in the game, like 12:15, I had texted you, and I'm like, man, I know it's early, but I think JJ is going to be really good. And to that point that Marshawn makes about, you know, maybe JJ not being comfortable explaining the parts of the game that when he was a player, he wasn't directly involved in, the part of the game I was watching was heavy on D-line stuff going on in the game. And I'm like, wow. I'm really learning a lot from JJ about why this guy did this, why this guy did that. Marshawn points it out, Seth. He explained what the D-gap was, which a lot of commentators will say things like, they're in 12 personnel. Oh, he gets right in the D-gap. This three technique, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
90% of the people don't understand what that stuff means. JJ explained it. He got on a casual fan level to give – didn't consume a ton of time, but he was educating people.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and that's honestly, if you go, people point to John Madden, you know, as one of the all-time greats and beloved, et cetera, et cetera. People got frustrated with John Madden because John Madden spent a lot of time explaining the basics.
Yeah.
So a lot of hardcore football fans, They choose not to remember this or whatever, but I can remember this because I lived in a house watching it with my dad and his friends, you know? So, like, people get kind of frustrated that Madden was breaking things down on such a basic level sometimes, but that's what the networks want. Yeah. That's you're cultivating the future NFL fans.
Yes.
You know, and you know, the people that are afraid to ask their brother or their spouse or don't want to look dumb, it's nice when somebody just explains it. So you like, cause you never know which question is a dumb question or not. Everybody goes through that. Yeah. So I think that I think JJ will probably try to be able to find that good balance between the basics and some of the more nuanced stuff.
So 3 years, you think, huh? That's your prediction? 3 years?
I said that, but then I remembered that Dan Fouts was in that role for about 20 years longer than he should have been. So like, Fouts was rough, man.
Yeah,
It was rough to. No, you know what? Fouts wasn't as bad as Dierdorf. Dierdorf was there way, way too long.
Yeah,
Fouts,
yeah,
I would say probably lost his fastball somewhere along the way. Dierdorf was there for decades too long. Dierdorf was awful.
My favorite Dierdorf memory, if I can personalize it, Dierdorf, Al Michaels, and Frank Gifford did the 1992 Sugar Bowl, which was Notre Dame and Florida. Yeah. And my brother was the kicker on Notre Dame that year. He actually had to come off the bench to kick because Craig Hendrick, the regular kicker, tore his knee in the game. So my brother comes in wearing a defensive lineman's jersey because they went with the green numbers in that game, and they only had one of every number. So out trots my brother with number 96 in this dress practically. And he kicked a few field goals, kicked a few extra points. They won. They beat Florida in that game 39-28. But my brother had a kickoff in that game that duck hooked like way out of bounds, like horribly out of bounds. Yeah. And Dierdorf goes, "Huh, that's how you get to be three off the tee." Like a golf analogy. I'm like, so anytime I think of Dierdorf, I'm like, yeah, he clowned my brother. So JJ Watt.
How bad was the kickoff?
It was bad. It landed like behind the people that were standing on the sidelines. Like he,
so they started off field position.
They started at the 35 or whatever it was. Yeah, it was late in the game, but it was, yeah. He's like, oh, so you get to be three off the tee. JJ and Kevin Harlan would be good. This is a text. Ian Eagle is damn good at his job. Yeah, Ian Eagle and Kevin Harlan are both excellent.
Harlan's the one that I know a lot of people say, like, well, what do the announcers really do for getting people to watch or not? I just enjoy watching Kevin Harlan
too.
Or listening to Kevin Harlan.
Yes.
When I hear him on the radio, I've stayed listening to games that I'm not really paying attention to all that much, just because I like the sound of his voice. And I think he does such a good blend of kind of the old time classical sports announcer voice, but yet with a sense of humor,
yeah,
and almost like a little bit of an irreverence while still setting the scene really, really well.
Yeah.
He's just, there's nobody better than him in my mind. He's by far my favorite.
He does play-by-play when drunk people run on the field.
Right, yeah, right, I mean, yeah.
What did he say? Yeah, the guy is true.
You know what he is? He's like the guy that he's an electric guitar player, but then you find out he also plays the 12-string classical guitar or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like he can do it all. He can do it all in one concert.
Yep.
In one concert. You go, you're thinking you're going to go watch a banjo player, and all of a sudden he whips out a harpsichord and does a pleasant melody. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a slow day. We just got to play a bunch of Kevin Harlan stuff. He's you're right. He's excellent. No question. Hey, we are trying to get new books into the hands of kids in low-income homes in Houston. This is an effort we do every year. And if you're unfamiliar with the correlation between child literacy or literacy in general and the quality of society that we live in, you can look up some numbers. Just know that there is a serious correlation to crime and mental health when it comes to literacy. So the sooner we can get books in kids' hands, the better off we're going to be as a city. And 61% of kids in Houston don't have a single book in their home. Let's rectify that today. A $30 donation to the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation gives one child in Houston their own home library, 6 new books of their own that they get to choose. That's the big key. Not being handed a bunch of books they don't want. It's an awesome event where they go and pick all 6 of their books. It's great. So text new books, all one word, that's new books to 41444 to donate and help us help Houston kids. All donations in Morning Drive are going to be matched by Reliance. When you donate 30, It's really 60 because Reliant is donating up to $10,000. They're going to be matching donations this morning. Text new books to 41444. Nick Caserio's game day superstition is the least surprising thing ever. That's coming up next.
DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.